Radio, a production of the National Writing Project. Today is March 30th, 2017, and tonight we're talking with educators interested in advocacy. I'm your host, Tanya Baker, at the NWP in Berkeley, California. As part of the National Writing Project's Building New Pathways to Leadership initiative, we've been interested in understanding, documenting, and discussing exactly what NWP-style leadership looks like. As part of that work, we've created, or perhaps I should say uncovered, a set of social practices that we believe teacher leaders are encouraged and supported to take up through their involvement in leadership at the National Writing Project. Much of our thinking about this work has derived from what we understand to be the social practices traditionally taken up by teacher leaders through an invitational summer institute. Throughout this year, we will air 6 shows, each highlighting one of those social practices and inviting a number of teacher leaders to share with us what that practice looks like in their classroom, school, or writing project. As I said, tonight, we are talking about advocacy. As we've defined advocacy in the social practices framework, we would say that in the classic summer institute, this would include helping new teacher consultants to advocate for policies and practices at the school, district, state and national level that support good teaching and teachers. It might include writing or taking action on behalf of the profession. And after the summer institute, it could include hosting a legislator in your classroom, advocating at the spring meeting, or writing to advocate for the profession. So what does teacher leadership or advocacy look like around the NWP network? What might you do to take up social practice of advocacy for education? Tonight, we'll look at 3 different examples of advocacy that might help us answer those questions. We're pleased to have several guests talk with us about this topic. We are welcoming Kathy Fleischer, Gideon, Liz Thackeray, Sam Reed, Tamara Anderson, Peggy Savage, Dina Portnoy, Carol Kilmanick, and Mark Letcher. Thank you all for joining us tonight.
Nice to be here.
Glad to be here.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
It's such a great chorus of voices and such a great range of possible ways of talking about advocacy. It's interesting, I think, for us to start our Building New Pathways series with advocacy, because I'd say it's been the most, not controversial, but maybe talked about of the 6 social practices when we roll out this framework. So far, no one has said the National Writing Project isn't about advocacy, but people have wondered out loud, do we do enough at our site to support teachers to take up the practice of advocacy? So tonight, we're really excited to talk about what you all are doing as advocates, how sites support teachers to develop the practice of advocacy, and where and how people might practice writing for advocacy out in the world. I'd love for us to begin our conversation by asking each of you to introduce yourself and say what your advocacy is focused on these days. And I just put you in sort of first name alphabetical order, or I did, but I guess I moved them around. So I'm just going to call out a name and ask you if you could introduce yourself and just very briefly say some topic or idea that your advocacy is focused on these days. And Kathy, I'll start with you.
Thanks. Hi, I'm Kathy Fleischer, and I'm a professor at Eastern Michigan University and co-director of the Eastern Michigan Writing Project. And a couple of things are going on. One is that I helped design with the National Writing Project a site called Everyday Advocacy, and that's a site that has lots of tips for teachers about how they can do advocacy work in their settings. And as part of that, we also have summer institutes, which we'll talk about a little bit later on in the program, for people to learn, teachers to learn how to do this kind of advocacy work.
Thanks, Kathy. Dina, how about you?
I'm Dina Portnoy. I was a teacher in the School District of Philadelphia for many years. I taught high school English. And the area of advocacy that I came on tonight to talk about is the Alliance for Philadelphia Public Schools. And we are facing, as are many other people, an incredible range of budget cuts and school closings. And I'm really concerned about having the voices of teachers and community members in the context of the fight to keep public education.
Thank you, Dina. Carol?
Hi, my name is Carol Kalimnik. I'm a retired teacher from the School District of Philadelphia. I'm a co-founder of the Alliance for Philadelphia Public Schools, and basically we have this notion that public schools are the foundation of a democracy, so we're constantly fighting for that. In Philadelphia, we lost any kind of local control over our school board. It's being run by an appointed board of people called the School Reform Commission. We'll talk about that later. But they are basically unaccountable to anybody. And we see what we do as a way of trying to hold them accountable and let that public voice of stakeholders in, teachers, parents, students, and community members. So we're pretty fierce about what we do.
I love that word, fierce. Thank you, Carol. Chris, how about you?
Hi, I'm Chris Gideon. I'm a high school teacher in Southeast Michigan, and I am working on creating a community of readers in my high school.
Lovely. Liz?
Hi, I'm Liz Thackeray, and I just left the classroom this year to start a doctoral program at the University of Utah in the Department of Education Psychology with a focus in reading and literacy. And I've been working in conjunction with Kathy to create another advocacy workshop for my local writing project site here in Utah.
Fantastic. Mark?
Hi, my name is Mark Letcher, and I teach English language arts at Lewis University, just outside of Chicago. And I'm on tonight to speak about a project that I've been working on for the last 3.5 years with some colleagues called Teachers, Profs, Parents, Writers Who Care, an advocacy-oriented research blog that is stemming from our interest in authentic student writing and authentic writing instruction.
Fantastic. Peggy.
Hi, how are you? My name is Peggy Savage. I'm a fifth-grade autistic support ELL teacher in Philadelphia. I am a veteran over 31 years of teaching in Philadelphia, and my advocacy points are with Black Lives Matter and the criminalization of Black girls in school. So I have a lot in restorative justice practice. So, yes, I'm busy with a lot of stuff.
You Philadelphians, you're busy. Bam. You.
We have to be.
Yeah.
Hey, this is Sam Reed. Sam Reed here, and I'm in Philadelphia. I teach at the U School, and my tag is that I teach my students to read, write, and make sense of the world. I teach humanities, and at the U School, we have a really good advantage of being able to, like, use design thinking and design principles to have our children look at, like, real wicked problems. And my advocacy point is engaging with student voice to address advocacy as well as using art, and I'll talk a little bit about that.
Nice. Thanks, Sam. And last but certainly not least, Tamara.
Hi. Name is Tamara Anderson. And
sorry.
Basically, I am a member of the Caucus of Working Educators here in Philadelphia. And one of the grounding of the work that we do there is really social justice unionism and its intersection with race and the community at large. That includes our parents. It's really taking labor work and connecting it back to the community where it comes from, and connecting educators back to the community and educators back to the parents and to the students.
I feel very lucky and very happy for all our listeners. We're also so lucky to have pulled together such an active and exciting group of people to talk about advocacy for education in this climate. I know we're all concerned, and it's exciting to see how much work is on the ground right now. I think let's people are really going to be hungry for the details at this point, so why don't we start by talking to people in Philadelphia about the shape and reach of their work. I'm excited to hear about the ways in which you are all taking up advocacy roles in classrooms and the broader community and intervening at various levels in the system in the service of social justice and equity. So I think, Sam, my first question is maybe for you. What is the link between literacy in the classroom and the empowerment of your students? And maybe you could answer that question in part by giving us an example of what that looks like in your high school.
Awesome. Yeah, so here at the U School, which is a relatively new school, we're in our third year. We'll have our first graduating class next year. And we use design thinking principles, and our teachers, our humanity team, we actually co-create our curriculum units that seek to kind of address what we call these wicked problems, which are like these big hairball problems that not easy solve issues around race, class, you know, poverty, and the like, but we use our curriculum as a way of like starting points to explore these things. And so, for example, example of some of the curriculum units that we've developed or questions that we've explored in our inquiry around like immigration, which is like super topical, the conflicts around immigration. And we explore like religious freedom and religious prosecution. And then we also had students get involved in a National Writing Project initiative, which was the letter to the next president. But again, instead of just like doing this work and just like a traditional turn in your essay and get a grade, we offer opportunities for kids to like incorporate art and media into their work as well. And if you want me to talk about that now, or you want to,
I'd love to say a little bit about that, Sam.
Yeah. So, for example, our Letters to the President project that we had students participate. We have one student, he was in my class, and he also had an interest in poetry. And so we have like this genius hour opportunity where it allows kids to explore their individual passions around like connected learning principles. And because I knew he liked poetry, once he developed his argumentative letter, he's like, you know what, I think I should make this into a poem. And he turned it into a poem. And he also, this young man also liked film. He's like, I think I should turn this poem into a short documentary. And he created this documentary. It was powerful. He received like numerous awards, and I even nominated him. Locally, we have the National Liberty Museum. I nominated him as a young hero, and he received like top award honors, and he also got the WHYY Youth Media Award for this work again. And this is the work that came out of our classroom, and it's both, you know, advocacy as well as, you know, rigorous and academic. So I think that's like powerful in of itself. In our religious unit, we had one young lady, it was actually a team, because we were exploring like the impact of religious freedom, and so she created argumentative video, which focused on Muslim identity and what's it like for her as a young Muslim woman to, you know, move around and navigate in the world that we live in. And that was really powerful. And in some way, the cool thing that happens is like kids start doing this work and it becomes like, it's still work, but they don't really see it as like academic work, but it's actually more rigorous than like traditional academic work, and so that's always exciting. Those are like some samples of what we've been able to do with the work. And if folks would like to like kind of dive a little deeper in terms of like the work that I do and the work that other teachers do, there's recently a book that's come out by Kira Baker Doyle called Teacher Leadership and Learning in the Connected World. And it features teachers like myself that are doing this connected work, this social justice work, this using advocacy work. And I would recommend folks check out the book, not just because I'm featured in it, but because it's a powerful book.
Thank you so much, Sam. First of all, I want to say that is a great advertisement for a future show, because we're hoping to have Kira and maybe yourself, some other teachers who are featuring that book on the radio.
Yeah, that would be.
Oh, go ahead, Sam. I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, I said that would be powerful.
And I also want to say I was about to ask you a question, which you then answered. So I just wanted to raise it up. Like this idea that doing work where kids are advocating for themselves or things that they think are important in the world does seem to raise the academic rigor of the work naturally through their deep, the importance of the work to them, so that they're doing rigorous academic work, but that doesn't feel like homework or somebody else's work, but it feels like the kind of work they want, young people want to do in the world. So thanks for sharing those examples with us.
No, awesome.
Dina and Carol, could you talk about the work of the Alliance for Philadelphia Public Schools and what has changed as a result of the advocacy work you're doing?
Okay, well, sure. Basically, I'm an early childhood teacher who's always seen my teaching as being meshed with my advocacy work. So when we formed the Alliance, or APS as it's called in Philly, it was taking the advocacy a step further. Basically, it's wonderful hearing what Sam and I'm sure Peggy and Tamara are doing, but what's happening in Philadelphia, it's national and international. There's a way of kind of discriminating against regular traditional public schools. And what we want to ensure is that every student has the opportunity for the, you know, to explore the areas that Sam and others are going to be talking about. Like I mentioned before, in Philadelphia, we have an unelected appointed school board that was basically imposed on us by the state back in 2001. And they basically have these policies that exclude public voice, any stakeholder, and also kind of direct spending to be spent or money to be spent on private businesses and consultants, as opposed to kind of supporting the work that goes on in our schools. In APS, we go to every one of these meetings. We're kind of like the watchdogs there to make sure the public understands what is going on, how money is being spent, and how important it is for people to actually speak up and become advocates for themselves and their students and their families as well. So our organization includes both people who are still working in the system as well as a lot of retired people. And it includes school staff, teachers, counselors, librarians, nurses, as well as parents and community members, people who are concerned about what's happening in Philadelphia with the school district here. So the School Reform Commission has basically operated with incredible amounts of secrecy. We actually took them to court about 2 years ago when they unilaterally canceled the teacher's contract without they voted on this. They did not give anybody a chance to say anything, to speak about this. And so it took us 2 years to negotiate a settlement, and that's really having an impact because through that settlement, we're able to force them into doing certain things that any kind of governmental body should be doing. And I'm going to stop there and let Dina jump in right now.
Great. Dina, can you tell us? Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. So, I think that Carol gave a really good picture of what APS has been doing over the last couple of years. And I started participating in APS as a kind of outgrowth of what I really believe about education after many years of working with the Writing Project and also teaching writing and playwriting in my classroom. And a lot of that helped me to recognize that teachers are always advocates for students and schools, and also advocates for student voices, which is a lot of what playwriting was about. And in fact, I believe that those voices were essential to ensure both equitable and quality education. So I always saw the need to address my concerns around education in alliance with other teachers, being very much a part of a teacher network, as well as with members of the larger community. The other thing I want to point out is that a lot of the work of APS is also about reading, writing, speaking, and research. There are many, many public and written statements and reports that are shared with the public, both at meetings and that are posted on the website, which is appsphilly.net. So being a writing project teacher as well as a teacher of playwriting, I always felt deeply connected to helping students find a very public voice for their concerns and ideas. And my work on the writing project enabled groups of teachers, sometimes in collaboration with parents and students, to have an impact on education. So in a similar way, I think that APPS helps teachers and community members find a mechanism to voice their concerns and actually act upon the issues in ways that can, over time, have a real impact on Philadelphia's public schools, which I think are endangered.
Thank you, Dina, and thank you, Carol. I just want to I just want to say thank you for being on the radio show, but thank you for the attention over time to the advocacy part of paying attention to what's happening in Philadelphia schools and being a voice for what you believe is right. I think we're seeing more and more in the world, in the United States, certainly people realizing that democracy really requires a lot of participation and attention over time, and that you can't give up and you can't go for a fix. And it's clear that you have you're working in an organization that's doing that day to day, reading, writing, listening, speaking work on behalf of the Philadelphia Public Schools. So thank you so much for doing that and for coming on to talk about it. I'm going to turn my attention to Peggy and Tamara. It does seem like Philadelphia is a very exciting place to live and work right now. There's so much going on. Can you tell us about the Caucus of Working Educators? It's a caucus of the Philadelphia Federation of Teachers. So can you first tell us what is the Working Educators Caucus and maybe what are some of the committees?
The Caucus of Working Educators is a caucus of the Philadelphia Federation of Teachers, the PFT. It has a little bit over 300 members. We are in year two of being in existence. The committees that are a part of WE, that's our acronym we like to call ourselves, are immigration, restorative practices, political and racial justice. And we also have a committee that works on taking back our PD, where we also provide twice a year we provide professional development for teachers. That's teacher-centered.
Nice. I understand that part of your work is a collaborative analysis of issues that help to fuel teachers' advocacy on behalf of students and educators. Can you tell us how that works?
Sure. So the biggest thing about – so originally the reason why it's a social justice caucus and why that's a huge thing is that for many years our unions have been top-down as far as decision-making. Or top down as far, or have been very disconnected from the community itself. So the caucus started as a social justice caucus, and it opposes institutional racism and organizes with students, parents, and other working people to hold schools and government accountable for providing a quality education for all students. So we basically, all of our work and all of our actions are housed in to go against attacks that are being waged on our low-income students and communities of color, the massive layoffs of school staff, the punitive practices and policies that push students into school-to-prison pipeline. And we work with educators as advocates on behalf of their students and their families to organize towards actions that will move the needle towards more sustainable change. So we are all of our work is trying not to have a one-off, like, oh, this family, you know, eviction rates are really high or the minimum wage. This includes, like, also organizing and partnering with other local organizations in Philadelphia. And a great example of this work is when we had our Black Lives Matter Week from January 23rd, January 27th of this year, that Peggy and I were one of the organizers, one of seven organizers that helped to organize and lift the 13 guiding principles of the movement through a week of panels, lesson plans, and conversations and events that were not only multi-generational, but were very diverse and brought a lot of people from a lot of different walks of life from across schools, the community, students, and families.
That must have been very exciting.
Oh my gosh, it was. It was exciting and it was daunting because it was a lot, and it was just the mass of how many people came out to support it really just showed us that we also have more work to do because people are very thirsty and hungry for this kind of work. And so, yeah. It was exciting. It was good.
Peggy, I understand you also organize a book group, and that this year one of your book groups discussed Push Out, The Criminalization of Black Girls in Schools by Monique Morris. How do you think the conversation about that book influenced, well, how did it influence your work with your grade students and maybe your grade team?
Right. I think Tamara and I did a really nice job of bringing teachers from all over. We had teachers from the suburbs. We had teachers that came over from different states, and the conversation was uncomfortable at first, but when we started talking about microaggressions involving Black girls and how they're portrayed and how people basically misinterpret and misunderstand, the conversation actually went into my classroom when it talked about criminalizing Black girls. And allowed my class and myself to examine the school district's code of conduct and the punitive practices around just wearing a uniform and the fact that some of the girls were actually wearing really, really tight clothing and not really being comfortable in class and not really even thriving as young ladies because they were too busy trying to breathe naturally. You know, many of my colleagues, we actually talked about this, and, you know, when teachers actually throw shade and microaggressions at young people, when they want to talk about their hair and, you know, the length of their hair and if their hair is purple or blue, I would say to them, so what does that have to do with them academically? Like, how impactful is your conversation? Like, what are you doing? I mean, I can understand if you have an entire conversation with all the girls and all the boys about their hair, but they were specifically having conversations about young Black girls.
Right.
So in my classroom, I try to minimize or eliminate that, you know, so we're looking at students' intellect and, you know, what they can do and their capacity for learning. So unfortunately, the girls themselves have kind of internalized this. And they reduce their own ability because, you know, I get them in fifth grade, so they've already been in kindergarten all the way up to fourth. So it's a lot to undo with students in classrooms. But, you know, through writing and poetry and, you know, they like to do a little rapping using GarageBand and stuff, you can see that, you know, the pride is there. So I just think that it's, you have to do that. You really do have to do that. You have to bring out the best in your students. And I just don't like the fact that African-American girls and brown girls are targeted with conversation about, oh, my God, she's humongous and blah, 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 blah. Okay, wow. That doesn't tell me what the child could actually do.
Very nice. Thank you, Philadelphia educators. It is a marvel to see your work from your classroom through your political advocacy and all you're doing on behalf of children and teachers and the city and community, and I really appreciate it. I'm sure, in fact, that you've all gotten our listeners all jazzed up to make advocacy part of their work and wondering how they can use their writing project to do that. So we're going to move to Site Leaders in Michigan so that we can talk about how they're supporting teachers and teacher communities to take up social practice of advocacy in their writing project. Kathy, I think we'll start with you. And my first question is, I know you're soon going to host an event called Everyday Advocacy. What do you mean by Everyday Advocacy?
So thanks. And it was so great to hear from the Philadelphia teachers because I think a lot of what they're doing really fits into what we're talking about as everyday advocacy. So it was great to hear from you guys. Thank you so much. So when we talk about everyday advocacy, what we mean by it is this, that we're believing that teachers can change the public narrative surrounding public education beginning by focusing on a single issue that impacts us and our students. So in our case, we think a lot about what do we wish others understood about literacy? How do we wish they understood literacy differently? Another part of being an everyday advocate is this idea that recognizing that change begins in our local context. A lot of people want to make change at a national level, but when you think about everyday advocacy, you think, what do we do first at our local level? And it also involves finding ways to make this a part of our day-to-day lives. So I think we believe that this movement towards everyday advocacy is really a recognition of what it means to be a teacher these days, what it means to be a professional. It's a shift from the way it was when I first started teaching, like over 30 years ago, just from knowing how to teach. That's what made you a teacher. But now you really have to be able to also strategically inform others, you know, colleagues, families, administrators, decision makers, how you can help them understand really what it means to be a teacher.
And what does the Eastern Michigan Writing Project do to support this part of being a teacher?
So we have been offering for the past 3 years, this summer will be the fourth year, a three-day summer workshop on how to become an everyday advocate, how to sort of move from your own personal stories into an advocacy project that can help make change in your local context. So anyone can attend. We have people coming this summer already from California and Illinois. We have dorms that people can stay in. We have teachers who will be coming for the first time. We have every year some returnees, people who have come before and have done some projects and want to come back to both support others and to rethink their own work. So we're really excited about that. Sort of at the basis of it is what we are talking about is working in ways that are smart, safe, savvy, and sustainable. And Chris, I think, is going to talk about that a little bit in a minute. But basically what we do is this. On the first day, people identify an issue that they care about, what they want others to understand about literacy. We also on that day learn about how to name and frame the issue so that it will speak to other people. You know, one of our problems is we know in our own head what's going on, and what's going on in somebody else's head might be totally different. So we say X and they hear Y. So we work a lot with something called the Frameworks Institute that talks about how to frame your issue in a way that other people will understand. We also look at the work of Marshall Gantz, who is a community organizer who has talked about how we change the public narrative through storytelling. How do you move from the story of self to the story of us to the story of now? People also spend a little bit of time on day one researching their issue, because once they really know their issue, they can gain a lot of knowledge and confidence about speaking about it. On the second day, then, we learn about some of the strategies of community organizing. So we go right into reading what community organizers have done, things like finding allies, discovering who's in charge of the issue, whose mind we have to change, and things about how to identify tactics that might fit for the plan that they want to make. This is really important to me because I think a lot of times we work towards tactics first, and so it's important to do some of this other stuff before you move to a tactic. And then on the third day, teachers actually create an action plan that they want to take back to put into practice in their own context and determine the first steps that they're going to do so they can actually put it in context or put it into practice. You know, we really want this to be not just esoteric, something we think about, you know, on the outside, but something you actually can do when you get back into your school. So we always say it's like a mix of learning how to do this work, applying what you've learned to your own issue, and coming up with a specific plan. Just let me give you an example of a couple plans. One we had recently, the teacher was trying to change how the alternative education program in which she worked is viewed by the students themselves and by the surrounding community to try to change sort of the negative way people thought about it. Another one was an ELL teacher who was trying to change how English language learners were perceived in the school community, moving from a deficit perspective to one that celebrated multiple languages. Another one we had was a middle school teacher who was trying to return team teaching to his school. It had been taken away recently, so he developed a plan about that and was actually successful in getting that change into effect.
That sounds awesome. I know Chris and Liz have both participated. Love to hear. Chris, maybe you can tell us about the work that you've done that came out of this workshop.
So I started this workshop with Kathy just feeling paralyzed and powerless, and like one person couldn't make the kind of changes I was hoping to make. And one of the amazing things was that this workshop gave me language and strategies to go forth and move into things. So the first thing we talked about was staying safe, which includes things like finding allies. So my idea was that if I want to empower students to read and create a buzz about reading in our school, then we need to work together to create a more vibrant school library. There hadn't been a lot of money put into it. It was filled with so many unreadable old books that I, as a reader, could not find a single book I wanted to read. So I enlisted the help of the library aide, who it turned out really wanted the exact same thing as I did, and we just didn't know it. For SMART, instead of thinking about throwing away thousands of books, we changed the frame to making the good books that we had visible and accessible to our high school students. So we did a little of that frameworks work to explain why we were doing and how that might work. And we looked up the American Library Association's criteria for culling books, which made it much easier to justify getting rid of the ones that needed to be gotten rid of. And then savvy is moving from your idea into action. And we got my students the day before Thanksgiving to help us cull the thousands of books out of the library, which means they have a voice in which books we kept. So not only did we have help doing the work, but my students got to make decisions and started to see the library as a place that had books they might want to read.
And that's theirs and that they're responsible for. That's so awesome.
Yes. I actually had a student who wasn't there that day say, I didn't know there were books in the library when I sent him, because now he could find them. And I think the biggest thing for me was I thought I had to make really big change. I had a friend who wants to end standardized testing in the United States. And I really needed to start smaller than that. I completely agree with her, but I just felt paralyzed thinking about that. And this one small change that we were able to create in our community gave me hope and created a community of people thinking about this and made room for us to take the next step.
That is fantastic. Liz, could you tell us about your project too?
Yeah, sure. So I'm in a little bit of a different situation than Chris. I participated in the summer advocacy workshop last summer, and I knew that I would be leaving the classroom to start a doctoral program. And so I've been racking my brain on how I can really be more involved in this work when I'm not currently in the classroom. And one thing that I've been working on is actually partnering with my local writing project site, the Central Utah Writing Project, to host an advocacy workshop that's a reduced version of Kathy's 3-day workshop. And possibly in the future, we will do a 3-day workshop. But one thing that I felt like was very important was for me to be able to share this advocacy training and the principles of everyday advocacy with other teachers in our state. And so that's one thing that I've been trying to do and so I'm coordinating with them, and we'll have some workshops coming up. One will likely be like a full day or half day Saturday workshop, and then we're possibly thinking about incorporating a small mini workshop as part of the Summer Institute as well this summer. And so those are two of the different options. But I really can't emphasize enough how great the advocacy workshops are in helping people to think about an issue that they want to frame and really focusing it on the smaller level. Because I think as teachers, we can feel really debilitated just in the current climate towards public education and towards our profession. And so I think, like Chris said, really starting small can actually make a big difference, even just in our happiness at work. So
that's lovely. Chris and Liz, thank you so much for sharing your examples, and I'm sure that's gotten people interested in the advocacy workshop, Kathy? So I know you said you have dorm space and there's space in your workshop. So if listeners are interested, what should they do?
So you can email me. I don't know if there's a spot to put that up on the site someplace, Kenya, but
we'll push it out when we push information about the radio show.
Okay, great. So I don't need to say it, but so you can email me, and I can send the invitation and the form you have to fill out to join. And we really encourage either teachers who want to join for themselves, or if you're a writing project director, or if you want to send somebody from your writing project to come, you know, like Liz is doing, so that you can take it back to your writing project. All the materials we have developed for this, we are open to giving them to everybody. So, you know, our idea is to spread this nationally, not to hold on to it just for ourselves. So it's all open to you. And another place you can go to learn more about it is, as I said at the top of the program, I've been working with Jenna Fornell at National Council of Teachers of English to develop an everyday advocacy website, everydayadvocacy.org, all one word, everyday advocacy. And it's got lots of materials on how you can do this in your own sites. It's got a lot about the theoretical roots of this. It's got hands-on examples. It's got, here, you can try this, you can try this, teacher stories, all kinds of things like that. And this is, we see the site as something that is like an evergreen kind of site. So we would love to have the stories of what people are doing in other places to be able to add those to the site as well.
That is fantastic. Thank you so much. And we look forward to, in future shows, hearing about more advocacy projects developed out of your workshop. We are going to switch gears again, and we're going to talk to Mark Letcher about writers who care. So I think if you're listening to the show and you're in your own place saying, but what about me? I'm by myself, or I don't know what my site's doing around advocacy. I like to write. If that's you, listener, I'm excited now to introduce you to Mark, and he's going to tell us about an ongoing opportunity to use writing to advocate around issues in education. So, Mark, why don't you start by telling us, what is Writers Who Care?
Sure. Be happy to. And first, let me just say, it's a thrill to be here. I'm furiously taking notes about all the projects that you're working on, because I think having me sort of bat at the end of the lineup here is good. We're really a site that hopes to share these types of stories about the really strong work that teachers are doing in their classroom. What we are, in a nutshell, is a research-based blog that focuses on stories of authentic student writing and authentic writing instruction in K through 16 classrooms. We have a very strong advocacy bent. The blog was started probably about 3.5 years ago. We are a project through the Commission on Writing Teacher Ed, which is basically a working group of teacher educators within the Conference on English Education, which is part of NCTE, the National Council of Teachers of English. And at this summer conference, a number of us were sitting around the table. At that point, standardized testing was hitting all of our states. Several of us were dealing with EdTPA as a testing for our teacher candidates. We are all former writing teachers. We are all teachers of writing teachers. We are all parents of young writers. And I think, Chris, you had used the phrase paralyzed and powerless, and that's exactly how we felt. We weren't quite sure what we could do, but we knew we needed to try to find some way to speak back to what was going on in our communities, in our areas. We threw around a lot of different ideas of how to not just let our voices be heard, because we can always find outlets. Professors can always find outlets to let other people hear what they want to say. But we wanted to find wider audiences, and we wanted to share teacher stories, and we wanted to help classroom teachers. So we arrived at the idea of trying a blog, which was a forum that none of us had ever really attempted to any great extent. So we were learning on the fly. We were learning together. But we really wanted to spotlight and celebrate the powerful work that writing teachers and students are doing, and illustrate how that work could potentially be affected by educational policies, political policies at the local, the state, or the federal level. And we also wanted the blog to be a place where we could circulate information about effective practices and policies so that our audiences could then take some of that information, hopefully, and advocate themselves for their own students, for teachers in their schools. Our title, again, Teachers, Profs, Parents, we hope to reach all of those audiences, and we really do want those folks to take what they're getting from us back out to their schools. We also try to address how research affects writing in schools and communities. Again, we're all experts basically on the field of writing instruction, but we know that others have so much expertise that is so worthy of being shared, and we want others to hear about it. And probably the last thing that we were hoping to do was just strengthen the connections and the community among universities, K-12 schools, teachers, parents, and students. Again, those of us who form the blog, we straddle all of these different worlds, but we were trying to find ways for those worlds to really have effective and open lines of communication.
That is such a great introduction and overview of this great project, Mark. I wonder, you said in general some things about the qualities that you all share in common, but I wonder if you might tell us a little bit about maybe everybody or one or two people who are on your who help run Writers Who Care.
Sure, absolutely. One of the folks, there were four of us who got this started, and my colleagues, Kristen Turner, Leah Zeidema, Sarah Hochstetler, who are all teacher educators at different institutions around the country, and we all work in English language arts. We're all former middle and high school teachers, and now we work at the university level. As the blog has grown over the years, and we've been happy to add more voices to the mix, we brought on some other teacher educators. We brought on some graduate students to help in sort of the coaching and the review and the day-to-day logistics of running a review site like this. We've really grown from something small to something that's really a peer-reviewed online journal, so to speak. So our team has grown, so now we do include other professors, other graduate students. We have a peer review process that we instituted a few years ago that allows us to access a wider network of colleagues to serve as reviewers and give feedback and offer different perspectives to the authors who submit to our blog. Kathy, for example, has been gracious enough to lend her expertise as a reviewer for some time to us and has written for the blog as well. So we've tried to grow our network as much as we can as the blog itself has grown.
Thanks. That's fantastic. You told us about the origins of the blog that really came out of response to standardized testing, both for students and for teacher ed programs. What are some of the other hot topics on your website right now? What are people writing about?
We have a lot of posts that deal with standardized testing. We have a lot of teachers who want to tell stories about what's different policies are really doing on the ground. I think it's very easy to lose sight of the fact that these policies do affect real students and real teachers and real homes. So we do have some very powerful posts that focus on that. We have a lot that does focus on the craft and form of writing. We've had several posts over the years that have talked about really good, viable, and engaging alternatives to the five-paragraph theme. None of us are fans of that particular approach. We've talked about a lot of cross-disciplinary and writing across the curriculum projects, writing workshop, different ways that students can publish their work, get it out there in front of an authentic audience. We've also had some writers who have talked about issues of culture and identity within the writing classroom and how they bring that out in their students. One of the other things to keep in mind for your listeners is that while we do focus, at least in our title, on writing, and we all started this blog with an interest towards writing instruction, we're really interested in literacy writ large across K-16. So we've also had posts on the Reading Writing Connection, on Reading Workshop, on student creating videos in the classroom and outside the classroom. So we try to again, bring in a broader definition of literacy, because we really want to expose our readers to as many great ideas as possible and give voice to the folks who are doing good work in their schools.
That's fantastic and very wide-ranging. If you have never submitted to an online journal or submitted to a peer-reviewed journal, could you tell our listeners a little bit about what the process is like to write and submit and go through the editorial process with your editorial board?
Yes, we try to make it as user-friendly and painless as possible because we really do want to solicit stories from people who maybe don't normally write for publication. So we understand that some people are reluctant to do it. We do encourage people to sometimes write with others. We find that collaborative writing for ourselves and for the authors on our blog can be a really empowering act. Our submissions are relatively short. For those of us in academia, they're very, very brief, and we find that we often have to ask some of our submitters who are university professors to really cut it down and keep it short and to the point. Most of our blog posts are roughly 500 to 1,000 words. We do ask that writers try to incorporate some sort of maybe outside research, and it doesn't mean it's a research paper, but if somebody got a really good idea from another site, then link to that. If somebody had read a paper or seen a good video or listened to a speaker at a conference or at a summer institute about a paper idea, provide us some information and we can incorporate that into the post. If folks visit our site, it's simply writerswhocare.wordpress.com. We do have, we think, a fairly clear submission procedure. People can simply send us their ideas to a Gmail address that we have set up for the site. Even if it is not a complete draft, we do offer coaching. We do offer our editor's time and expertise to allow writers to flesh ideas out. We do try to act as a sounding board and give people as much feedback and constructive criticism as possible. Our goal is to never, ever turn a writer away. We really do want to turn everything that comes to us into the best possible piece. We also understand that not everyone writes for a wide audience like this, so we do keep a careful eye on that. Our editorial process, somebody will send us, you know, a rough draft or something a little bit more fleshed out and say, this is what I've got, what can you do with it? We then send it out to a couple of reviewers within our network who will offer some feedback. It's always very, very positive. It's always very question-based. It always offers very, very concrete steps for how to turn a draft into something even more effective. We have one of our editors look at it as well. So by the time it goes through the entire process, we normally get at least three pairs of eyes on it, which, again, is effective practice for any writer. Our turnaround time is relatively short. We aim for just a few weeks between submission and feedback to the author. So, again, for our colleagues who work in university settings, this is a very, very quick process as opposed to what we're used to for academic journals. And then we'll get feedback to an author. We try to set a tentative timeline for an author to resubmit. And then if there's any other cleanup work that needs to be done, we take care of it, and then we get it posted. We've gotten into the habit during the academic year of posting every 2 or 3 weeks, depending on the volume that we have coming in. We are always, always looking for new submissions. And again, everything that I've heard for the past 50 minutes, I've been writing notes thinking all of this would make such fantastic material for our blog or any public forum, just to get those stories out there. Again, we try to ask authors to think about elements of electronic writing that might be different than the normal printed word. So visuals, videos, music, links to other sites or other materials. Again, trying to make the post as much of a one-stop shop as possible for information about that topic. For teachers who maybe don't want to write for the blog but still would like to use us as a resource, obviously the posts are there. and we know that many teachers do use them. We also do have a number of resources on the blog, everything from NWP and NCTE to broader networks of public advocacy for education, such as the Cooperative Catalyst, the Network for Public Ed, Rethinking Schools, organizations like that. We've also gotten into the practice of posting research briefs and talking points. So again, you had mentioned if teachers are on their own in a building, they're a department of one, or they're the only one who teaches ninth grade English, we want this to be a place where they can go for resources. If somebody wants to try Writer's Workshop, they can find resources here so that they can maybe put the idea into practice or use it as a way to justify the practice to an administrator or explain it to parents who might not be familiar with it. So we really do try to provide as many resources as possible. So, if someone's not looking to write, but just looking to shop around and read, we try to provide that as well.
This is fantastic. We're nearing the end of the hour mark, but I understand that Writers Who Care is an advocacy project coming up this month. Is that correct? Or in April?
Yes, yes. Yep.
Could you give us like a 2-minute overview of that?
Sure. NCTE has designated March as Literacy Advocacy Month. So earlier this month, we sort of put a heads up on our site that we were going to be putting up a post, and we had a great post that just posted on Monday from Sarah Kager, who works down at the University of Georgia. And she set up a Flipgrid on our site. And a Flipgrid, for those who don't know, is simply an online tool for collecting short video posts, about 60 or 90 seconds in length. And it puts them all on a single grid that you can then view on one page. And we've asked folks to simply log on and submit their own video. And all of the videos are focused on one single prompt, and that's simply, how do you use writing as a tool for literacy advocacy? And again, we're hoping to share that widely throughout March and April, and we're hoping that others will do the same so that, again, if someone is on their own, they can see that others are approaching literacy in somewhat the same ways or maybe gather new ideas and really just expand their network. Kathy had mentioned this earlier, that over the years we've learned that teaching is less, not necessarily less, but more than just what we do, the nuts and bolts in our classroom. It's about, you know, strategically informing others about what we do. And we really think that this Flipgrid is another example of that, because if we don't tell our stories, or if we don't tell the stories of our colleagues, we really don't know who will. And we're hoping to get that word out in a wide fashion. And this last post is, I think, a very, very good example of how we can do that.
Thank you, Mark. Thank you all for spending the last hour with me. We have really come to the end of the hour amazingly. I feel like we've kind of been on a racetrack through potential advocacy moves for teachers and writing projects. And I thank you for the wealth of resources and the ideas and the models for individual teachers and writing project sites. And most importantly, I thank you all for the good work out in the world. Thanks so much for being with us tonight.
Thank you.
Thanks for having
us. Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
You're welcome.
Good night.
All right.
Good night.
Good night.